Well, this is some serious stuff, because that's simply not the case. In fact, he's caught in a real dilemma, because his favorite author, Lawrence Stern, has a sidekick, who's black, by the name of Ignatius Sancho. And Sancho writes Sternian prose. And he acknowledges Ignatius Sancho has approached nearer to merit in composition. Upon the whole, though we admit him to the first place among those of his own color, who have presented themselves to the public judgment, yet when we compare him with the writers of the race among whom he lived, and particularly with the epistolary class, which is to say whites, we are compelled to enroll him at the bottom of the column. This criticism supposes the letters published under his name to be genuine, and to have received amendment from no other hand, points which would not be of easy investigation. So even here, when he's shown obvious evidence of black achievement, he tends to deny it. He tends to raise questions. Well, perhaps it was written by someone else, presumably a white. And he draws the invidious distinction with Roman slavery to show that the inferiority of Africans is not cultural, but is in fact racial. We know that among the Romans, about the Augustan age especially, the condition of their slaves was much more deplorable than that of the blacks on the continent of America. The two sexes were confined in separate apartments because the cost to raise a child was more expensive for the master than to buy one. And yet, now I want to quote, notwithstanding these and other discouraging circumstances among the Romans, the slaves were often the rarest artists. They excelled too in science, insomuch as to be usually employed as tutors to the master's children. Epictetus, Diogenes, Phaedons, Terence, and Phaedrus were slaves. But they were of the race of whites. It is not their condition, then, but nature which has produced the distinction. Jefferson's fears of Africans and fears of African-American racial war, and his clear animus towards blacks, suggests a person who is a racist, but a racist with a bad conscience. As he writes to the Marquis de Chasteloup, I believe the Indian then to be in body and mind equal to the white man. I suppose the black man in his present state might not be so. But it would be hazardous to affirm that equally cultivated for a few generations, he would not become so. That's contrary to Jefferson's other public statements. It's because Jefferson is torn by his own racist convictions. He knows that in some sense they're not right, that they don't live up to his Enlightenment ideals. And his solution to this is optimism and wishful thinking. As he states in the notes, in the very first session held under the Republican government, the Assembly passed a law for the perpetual prohibition of the importation of slaves. This will in some measure stop the increase of this great political and moral evil, while the minds of our citizens may be ripening for a complete emancipation of human nature. So what I'm suggesting is that slavery is the unbearable problem for Jefferson. It's his bete noire. His enlightened principles pull him in one direction. His social status and identity as a Virginia slave owner pull him in another. Increasingly, he resolves this conflict between his anti-slavery and racist convictions through fantasies of future emancipation and colonization, where the black scourge will be removed from America and established in a nation of their own. In the notes, he mentions a scheme to emancipate all slaves born after passing an act. The bill reported by the revisers does not itself contain this proposition. But an amendment containing it was prepared to be offered to the legislature when the bill should be taken up, and further directing that they should continue with their parents to a certain age, then be brought up at the public expense to tillage, arts, or science, according to their geniuses, till the females should be 18, the males 21, when they should be colonized to such place as the circumstances of the time should render most proper. Well, there's an obvious question. Why not simply incorporate the emancipated blacks into the American political community? And he addresses this problem. Deep-rooted prejudices entertained by the whites, 10,000 recollections by the blacks of the injuries they have sustained, new provocations, the real distinctions which nature has made, and many other circumstances will divide us into parties, produce convulsions, which will probably never end, but in the extermination of the one or the other race. So Jefferson can't imagine a world with free blacks that does not include a race war. Again, we see in Jefferson a figure struggling to transcend the limits of his experience, and yet unable to because of his prejudices. Well, we'll see that Jefferson, in fact, does begin to transcend, never entirely on this problem. But in our next lecture, when we look at Jefferson abroad, we'll see the development of his mature, full, radical political philosophy.